Well, if any of you are involved in paranormal research, this is a great read, Paranormal Technology. David Roundtree, our guest. We'll be back with more on Coast to Coast AM. David, you seem to go into a lot of detail about light. Tell me its connection to some of this.
Well, that's another fascinating aspect of it. So many times you will hear someone say that they saw something out of the corner of their eye.
Right.
And yet when they look directly at it, they don't see anything
there.
It's
gone. It's not there.
And I've talked to a couple of optometrists. I mean, my optometrist is fascinated by the stuff I'm doing right now. But I've talked to him in detail about how our eye responds to the spectrum of light. And our peripheral vision is sensitive to ultraviolet light, at least in the near ultraviolet light range. Probably part of our flea impulse that we can catch things that, you know, are in that light spectrum. We have started measuring ultraviolet light levels as well as luminance as well as several other light-related functions during these events. And we have found that there are bursts of ultraviolet light associated with these events, which also brings up another whole bucket full of possibilities here. But that part of it is kind of fascinating to me because it explains why some things show up under ultraviolet photography or full spectrum photography or infrared photography, because some of these effects are occurring outside of our normal vision of light. And we need desperately to study these fringe areas of light that we don't perceive with our eyes, and that amazingly digital cameras do perceive into it far more than we do. And with the advent of digital cameras, a lot of anomalies started showing up in people's photographs, anomalies that they didn't see with their eye. Now, a lot of people will come up with all sorts of alternative explanations for these things, and to a certain degree, those explanations hold true, but not in all of them. And this whole thing with the orb question that's been beaten around and thrown about for years and years with people firmly entrenched on either side of the fence.
Yeah. What are they? Are they light refraction? What are they?
Right, exactly. Is it lens flare? Is it dust within 4 inches of the camera lens? And potentially, yes, all of those things hold true. However, I've always found that instead of all orbs being, you know, spirits or all orbs being artifacts of the camera use, somewhere in between probably is where the truth's going to lie. And so we started to figure out a way to look at it seriously and settle it once and for all. And using different aspects of light was a tool for doing that. It turns out that if you take a couple of cameras and set them up in an area in two different spots from two different angles, and you take a photograph of the same area, and something like that shows up in roughly the same place in the room, you can pretty much rule out dust and lens flares being the cause. Well, now you're left with something else. What is it? And that led, of course, to more research.
That's right.
And to the point where I actually built this thing to try to capture one of these things and measure it. And my neighbors, of course, think I am completely insane. But
oh, they must see you do all kinds of things.
You would not believe. My basement sometimes glows green at night. I'm sure they're firmly convinced that I'm mentally deranged.
Or a mad scientist or something.
Yes, actually, I've been called that. So, I came up with using some very simple things that anyone can put together from the hardware store, like PVC pipe, coupling, aluminum screen, and kind of built a sampling device using a small shop vac that I could suck in and sample air and put across the grid that I could measure across the grid. Turns out I burned up a couple of meters because I encountered what I think may be cold plasma. And again, this brings us back to the whole wormhole part of the equation, because the formation of cold plasma would be kind of a byproduct of this thing opening up. So as this book progressed, this is a kind of an interesting story too. As this book progressed and I started looking at all of this data from over the years, it all started to form into this pattern. And while I started out with several theories as to what was going on at the beginning of writing the book, when I got to the end of writing the book, my whole idea of what was going on had completely changed, because it was the first time I literally sat down and digested everything that I had done over the years and come up with a conclusion.
Is anybody else conducting truly a scientific approach to look at this?
Yeah, believe it or not, there are several groups. There's a group called Paranormal Anomalous Research. They are doing kind of parallel studies. There's Rocky Mountain Paranormal Research in Colorado is doing some parallel studies. I'm starting to get a lot of emails and Facebook messages from people who are asking very specific questions about some of the equipment we assembled and how to do it and how to use it. So the goal of getting people more into this line of thought and motivation is starting to materialize, which is also very personally rewarding to me. You know, that people are starting to look at this and say, hey, this is cool. This is interesting. You know, this is something different. This is telling us something. Because, you know, paranormal research has kind of stagnated over the years. You know, I'm sure you've watched some of the offerings on TV where people, you know, squeal and dance up and down when they have a 5 milligauss, you know, jump in their meter in their hand.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But they really have no idea what that means. They assume it's a ghost immediately, and there's no way to know that. You have to know more about that picture than just how strong the field is. You need to know what frequency it is, what the wave looks like. I mean, there's a lot of different things you can use. And part of the motivation with the book was to explain that to people and to offer them a viable alternative to get that information.
Is there or are there ghosts everywhere all around us, or maybe not?
I can't support that notion. I can support that there are places that tend to be very active with this type of manifestation. And those places tend to have a death associated with it, which makes me think maybe a natural process of dying opens this wormhole. Maybe that's part of the trigger. Maybe that's part of the equation that has to happen in order for this to trigger. I mean, we just simply don't know, because they're really, I mean, most of the people doing this are self-funding their research.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, so, we're working on shoestring budgets and we're making, you know, pretty good strides, but the field really needs some serious funding to put some serious instrumentation into looking at some of this.
Speaking of instrumentation, what kind of instruments, what kind of equipment do you use?
Well, I have a lot of pretty typical lab quality equipment. We do use some EMF detectors, survey meters, radiation meters, Geiger counters, but we also use data loggers and sensors, which to me really is the wave of the future for gathering this stuff, where you have laptop-based equipment. I have an RF spectrum analyzer that's based on a Palm Pilot processor, so that you stick a Palm Pilot in this box, and the box has all the supporting circuitry to make an RF spectrum analyzer, and you can download the scans. I mean, the technology is just incredible now. And these things are expensive to the average person, but they're not that expensive. I mean, for example, a lab-quality RF spectrum analyzer is going to start at around $25,000. For less than $2,000, you can get a handheld one just as accurate based on a Palm Pilot processor. So, I mean, these things are incredible, what's going on here. And I explore this. I explore all the different types of equipment for each specific area to measure, which are the good pieces of equipment. Like, you want something that's NIST calibrated, that's lab quality. You want something that is not going to be debunked as being inaccurate, so all your data goes out the window.
When you combine the results of all the different kinds of equipment you bring, does that give you the conclusion that there's something going on here? When you look at, let's say you're using 6 different pieces of equipment, each one of them is registering something very strange.
Right.
What do you conclude based on that?
Well, we definitely know something's going on, and we definitely know that we can't explain it in ordinary terms, and we have to look for an answer in some other aspect of science, which is why quantum mechanics has really been becoming very dominant in our research, because we are finding quantum-like effects occurring and we are documenting quantum-like effects at a macro level, at a big level, like where the grown-ups are playing. And instead of these subatomic particle effects, they are macro. And to me, I think the science of quantum mechanics is probably our best bet in exploring this phenomenon and finding an answer, if we're going to find an answer based in science.
Have you been able to conclude yet, David, what types of weather conditions are more hospitable for this?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Clearly, anything that puts more energy into the environment is feeding it.
Like lightning storms.
Lightning
like
is
that.
Great stuff. In fact, we artificially sometimes stimulate the environment by running a Tesla coil, for example, for a few minutes before we do, some readings and stuff. And we have found that it definitely increases effects. It increases activity. We have done this in situations where we've gone somewhere and for hours nothing has happened and we're bored stiff and we'll take the Tesla coil and fire it up and it's like the whole room goes on LSD.
Do you generally do you generally go to areas that are considered to be haunted?
Yes.
Okay.
We go to places where there is reported experiences, reported activity, simply because we don't have time to farm out places that don't have any associated reports. So we try to go places to study the phenomena where the phenomena has been reported. It carries us to a lot of places, Victorian homes, old factories, abandoned warehouses, things that have nothing really remarkable about them, but after the fact in historical digging, we find that there were some kind of strange things in life that occurred there that may be contributory to this phenomena. People getting murdered, people being buried there, that sort of thing. So, while I'm not ready to say there's a direct correlation, there certainly seems to be, and the data is certainly leaning in that direction. So, I mean, we're very close to probably making a pretty big discovery as far as quantum mechanics. The heck with paranormal and what's going on there. We may actually be on the cusp of making a discovery in physics that will prove some theoretical situations that haven't been proven yet. And to me, that's a huge part of the whole thing, and a part of the motivation is to learn more about the world around us and how it affects us as living people.
Is there a need by this consciousness, these ghosts, to want to communicate with us?
I think so. I think in many cases there are attachments. People form attachments to their environment. They form attachments to their homes. They form attachments to their favorite places or the favorite place they took a vacation. And I think that there's a connection that's made, and we don't really understand the nature of that connection, but there definitely seems something that causes these things to gravitate to specific places in specific areas.
I want to point out that folks should go to your website, spiritinvestigations.org, and just take a look at the various categories that David has, but specifically the equipment, the research sections of your website. Very detailed, David.
Thank you. Well, the idea is to get science to take us seriously and to at least say, I love going up to a physicist and saying, okay, we did this, this, and this. You explain it to me. And amazingly, we have some people who are physicists who are offering suggestions on directions to look and things to try and, some kind of behind-the-scene guidance in certain areas where we're a little weak knowledge-wise. And while they're not willing to openly come out and be a part of it, I think if we do discover something that is provable and is a byproduct of this, I'm sure they will come out and say, oh yes, we were working behind the scenes with these guys for years, which would be great. Who cares, as long as we get serious research.
You get it done. That's right. Why? It is quite obvious. Most people are obsessed with the other side, obsessed with death.
I think people want to believe that there's more to it than just this physical life. I mean, this is as old as man itself. I mean, we started all of our belief systems based historically on believing that this wasn't the end of it.
This would be kind of sad if it was just the end of it, wouldn't it?
Well, it'd be kind of a waste, wouldn't it? I mean, if we just turn to dust and that was the end of it, that's fine. But we don't turn to dust and that's the end of it because something happens to the energy that makes us live, that makes us think, that makes us reason. Something happens to that energy. And the whole study of this aspect of paranormal phenomena is to search for that energy to document it.
Well, since the beginning of time, mankind has been obsessed with trying to get the answers to what might be on the other side.
Absolutely. Look at the philosophers through history. I mean, they've all weighed in on it. And it's only natural, I think, for us to want to know our destiny in the grand scheme of things.
I like the fact that even before organized religion, the ancients wanted answers to this.
Absolutely.
You know, because part of my thought was, you know, maybe organized religion wanted us to believe that there's life after death to control us and stuff. No, I don't think that's the case.
No, we had these leanings long before there was organized religion.
That's right.
And I think it's a byproduct of the consciousness. The consciousness may know more than we know, but we're not allowed to know it. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's like we have a guard in us. You know, we have like a check and balance that keeps us aligned with the task at hand instead of glimpsing into that other aspect of reality, of our world. And I think what made me think about that the most was when I started thinking, you know, there's a lot of theories about residual hauntings. I've heard everything from the stones have memories to all these different things, you know. But what if we're sitting at a battlefield, for example, at Gettysburg, and we see a battle take place that isn't done by reenactors? What if we're literally looking into a wormhole because of our location? We're just at the right place, and we're seeing the actual historic event as it takes place.
Because we're looking
at time. We're looking through time in that wormhole. And that could very well explain it. It could explain how UFOs get here without breaking the laws of relativity. They could jump from one part of our universe to another using a wormhole.
That's right.
It could explain cryptozoology, how beasts come and go, like they blink in and out. They could be using these conduits for travel. I mean, I'm excited about this aspect of the theory because it has the potential of uniting a lot of aspects of paranormal research with a common source or a common conduit.
Well, let me ask you about the Ouija board for a second. Is it and can it be used as a piece of equipment, as a communication device?
Well, we don't use things like that because it's easily debunked scientifically. However, I believe that people are the aspect of the tool. If people use something that opens them up to receive something they wouldn't ordinarily receive, in other words, like fine-tuning them like a radio, then it's a tool for them. And even though that's a subjective way of getting the evidence, oftentimes it can be strengthened with the objective evidence collected to support it. So while the Ouija board per se, I don't consider a tool, a person who gets useful information from it would. And that aspect of it is the part we have to learn how to measure.
I've got a friend who swears by the Ouija board. You know, she's not evil by any means, but she believes that it is a great way to get to the other side.
Well, you know, it's a tool. Just like tarot cards are a tool, just like rune stones are a tool, or any ancient oracle that were used, they were tools that help people open up to these transmissions.
David, when we come back, I want to talk with you a little bit more about orbs. We just touched on that just a brief way, but I got to tell you, I get more pictures, more stories from people about orbs, and I want to get your take on that. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we'll take your calls next hour with David Rowntree, author of Paranormal Technology, as we talk about the science behind ghost hunting. That'll be next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We've got David Rowntree, and next hour we'll have you joining the mix here. David, orbs, what do you think they are?
Well, I think for the most part they are some type of particulate matter within 4 inches of the lens of a camera that the flash picks up and that the autofocus of the camera doesn't respond to. However, having said that, there is a percentage of them that don't fall into that category at all and appear to be some type of cold plasma that may or may not be, I think it is, a byproduct of this conduit interacting with our environment. Now, we've done quite a series of different experiments to look at this. As I mentioned earlier, you know, I've always found that there's no extreme in the truth. It's generally somewhere in between two opposing views.
Yeah.
And in this case, it turns out that there is something to that in the whole orb question. And the fact is that there's no way to look at a single picture of an orb and say, oh, yeah, that's a real orb. I see a face in it. Well, that's, you know, some type of apophenia or pareidolia that's working on our vision, making us make sense out of it. The only way we can identify it is if we have photographs of it from different angles and it's placed in the same geographic region of the room. Then we know it's not something directly in front of the lens of one camera or the other. Now, if we take two pictures and we have orbs in one camera but not the other one, we can pretty well assume that that's dust. But if we find one that shows up in both photographs, then we've got a pretty good idea that there's something else out in the field of view of the camera that we need to identify. And that started this whole thing with us trying to sample one of these things and try to measure it. And at this point, I can't tell you how much energy is in one, because I keep burning up meters trying to measure it. I've blown a lot of fuses in the voltmeters that we've been using, but I would anticipate that we're probably looking at something in the order of several thousand volts with, you know, maybe a half amp of current or something. So it's very possible that when people get the feeling that their hair is standing on end in these type of situations, it may be because of a proximity to this energy, this plasma. And to me, that's very fascinating, because there's a potential there that someone could actually discharge one. And it would be kind of akin to walking across a carpet and touching your finger to a doorknob on a dry day. I mean, you could get a pretty nasty shock from one of these things if you were at the right place in the right time.
I used to think they were floating souls.
A lot of people still do. A lot of people believe that. I believe that it's a byproduct of the process. I believe that... if a real orb is present, then you're probably having some type of interaction that we call a paranormal experience, because there's probably a conduit opening up that's allowing this energy to interact with us. So it is a sign, I think, of something untoward going on. But I've discharged these things, and I would hate to believe that I've discharged someone's soul to ground. I mean, that would be a totally bad thing, and I don't think we would be capable of doing that, but that's just a personal belief. But yeah, I think it's more of a byproduct. In fact, I think a lot of the things that we term paranormal are byproducts of the whole process, and that the actual paranormal event is the personal interaction that occurs that we place to the experience of a connection. Something touches you, or someone tells you something that's specific to you from this source, or, you know, that sort of thing that's a personal experience. That's really what hammers the paranormal part of it in. The rest of it may just be the facilitation of that moment that you have that experience.
Well, that's a good point. What have you now concluded? We've touched on many of them, but what have you concluded beyond a shadow of a doubt as far as you're concerned? Or can you say that? Can you say a shadow of a doubt?
In some things, I can say things. I'm firmly convinced that there's something to it. Absolutely. And it's measurable. Absolutely. Firmly convinced. I'm firmly convinced that we don't totally understand it, but that we will find the answer in science. And it may be that we discover a lot of things about ourselves in that process. I also believe that measuring and looking for these low-frequency electromagnetic fields are going to be a vital part of the puzzle. I think if we can figure out a way to map a potential wormhole to, you know, absolutely prove that that's what is in fact going on, I believe we're going to open up a whole new threshold in the study of science. But there's a lot of unanswered questions, George, and until there's funding put into this line of research and serious, disciplined researchers doing it, it's going to be a lot of speculation still.
Does it bring you closer to this godlike figure?
Well, I'm a very religious person. In fact, I'm born again Roman Catholic. I converted to Catholicism about 10 years ago. But I have encountered nothing in this research that has swayed my faith. I am more firmly convinced of what I believe than I was before I started down this path.
So there is a divine creator as far as you're concerned.
Even Einstein believed that there was an intelligence in the universe. And yes, I believe that we are but we things compared to the grand scheme of things. So, yeah, I mean, and everything that I've encountered has only reinforced my personal beliefs. And that's been a personally rewarding aspect of it as well. And I think a lot of why people are interested, you know, going back to our conversation on why are we obsessed with this death thing, I think that we need that reinforcement. It gives us comfort. And in today's world, more so than ever, we need a little bit of spiritual comfort from time to time because it keeps our feet firmly on the ground.
Do we know at this point, though, what came first, the physical or this other realm?
I think it's always existed in a big stew pot. You know, I think that there's this thing called the multiverse. And I put it to, like, there's this big stew pot. And there's maybe 10 to the 10 to the 6th number of universes in it. And these universes expand and contract by, you know, sucking matter in through a black hole from one into another. I don't believe there was ever such a thing as a Big Bang. I think instead there was a big flow. I think a brain punched through, blew up, maybe a black hole formed and started pouring matter into this universe, and it still is. We're still expanding. I think in some places our universe may be pouring matter into an adjacent one and expanding
mm-hmm.
it.
Maybe they collided.
And the thing is, exactly, and the thing is that all this stuff keeps all the energy in that stew pot. It just transfers from one realm to another, but the total of the energy remains the same. So it's neither created nor destroyed. It just changes geographic location from time to time. So, yeah, I think universes expand and they contract, and I think that it's a normal aspect of the dynamics of the multiverse. The energy moves around. It transfers. It goes from one place to the other. So an adjacent universe may not be based on matter, but may be based on pure energy. It may be that light at the end of the tunnel we're going to is an emanation of pure energy, where we live as beings of pure energy. Who knows?
Well, you're convinced, though, with your equipment and your testing, that something's out there.
Absolutely, and it's measurable what's out there. I mean, we can measure it. We can document it. And so that's the tantalizing, you know, thing that's the bait that, you know, keeps us moving forward on it, because we keep getting little tidbits of reward along the way.
Is it aware, this consciousness that's out there?
It seems to be.
It's aware of us?
It seems to be. Certainly the anecdotal evidence supports that notion. That it's not only aware of us, but sometimes it seeks the interaction on its own volition for whatever motivations it may have.
So when a little kid says, I talk to my little friend, and they think...
He
may be doing that.
That's exactly right.
It seems... Can they manifest themselves whenever they want?
I'm not sure. I think conditions certainly improve the chances of that. I think additional energy available, particularly natural type of energy available, tends to help facilitate those sort of things. But I really can't say for certain, because the whole nature of paranormal phenomena is so transitory, it's difficult to establish that line of data.
As technology continues to change, David, is it going to eventually give us these answers that you're looking for?
Well, not only is it going to give us these answers, it's going to open up a whole new set of questions. And I think that's why it's so fascinating to me, because I have more questions today than I did 10 years ago, and an infinitely larger amount of questions than I had 30 years ago. So as we learn more, of course, more questions become apparent.
Isn't it an exciting proposition for you?
To me, it has been very personally rewarding, because it has allowed me to take everything that I know, every aspect of my life and experience up to this point, and apply it in an activity, in a single activity. Yeah, it's been personally rewarding. I mean, it hasn't been monetarily rewarding.
No, you're not going to get rich chasing ghosts.
No, it's not a money-making endeavor. In fact, it's been a very costly one, but it's been hugely personally gratifying at a lot of different levels. And that's why I think I'm so into it. I enjoy helping other people with it. I enjoy talking with them, giving them advice, pointing them in some right directions, helping them to avoid mistakes I've made. And I enjoy the interaction with other investigators and other people. And to me, I mean, life is to be lived. And you're living life when you're doing that.
What do you think of shows like Ghost Hunters, Grant and Jason doing their thing, and so many other people out there?
Well, I have to hand it to them. They put it into the kitchen. They put it into America's kitchen. I've watched the whole thing of the paranormal come and go over the years, but it's never been at this level of human interest that it is today. And we have them to thank for that. Now, we also have them to thank for some of the methodologies that are used out there. And understandably, it's a mixed blessing. But I have to give them credit where credit is due. They have certainly made it a lot easier for us to get that data.
Oh, that's true. Absolutely true. You go back to the Bible, and you hear about fallen angels and things like that.
Right.
If you add in things that you've talked about tonight, David, the wormholes and how, you know, they may be traveling back and forth, it's very possible that, you know, everybody's talking about the same thing.
Absolutely. Here's the thing, George. There could be a wormhole to heaven, and there could be a wormhole to hell.
That's right.
And based on people's experiences with near-death experiences and OBEs, out-of-body experiences, both types of experiences have been reported. So maybe that's where those stories of those places came from. People who went there and came back. And maybe there is some truth to it. And if that's the case, I would rather believe what I believe and be hedging my bets.
Yeah, absolutely. Has this made you more comfortable with death?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I see it as an extension of life. I see it as turning the page, you know. And I've suffered from a heart attack. I've had triple bypass surgery. I've been pretty close a couple of times myself over my life. And I am more comfortable with it with each passing event that may occur in my life. And it's because I realize that it's just an extension of the book. It's just another page. And I don't fear it. I mean, I'm in no hurry to get to it yet.
Right.
Because there's a lot of things I still want to do, particularly in this field. But I don't fear it. I don't think it's something to be feared. I think it's a part of life. It's just as much a part of life as being born is.
Don't you wish at 20 you would have known things that you know now?
Oh, my God.
How about everything?
You.
About health, ghosts, you name it. Absolutely.
If I knew now, or then, what I knew now, I'd be a millionaire.
Apple, you know? Computers.
Absolutely. I mean, I would have a much different life than I have now. But, you know, that's not what life's about. Life's about, you know, making your own mistakes and getting out there and doing things on your own and doing them the hard way and relying on your intuition and your guts and your gumption and, you know, and failing. You know, nobody gets through life a winner.
There's nothing wrong with failure.
Nope.
As long as you learn from it.
Everybody fails.
If you don't learn from failure, then it's a waste.
Well, you know, then you're a dope, you know. But, I mean, the whole point of it is to advance your cause and to help your fellow man along the way if you can. And if you can do that, man, there's no better way to live.
That's true. Absolutely true. So what do you guys do next?
Well, I am going to be speaking March 18th and 19th in Beaumont, Texas, at the second annual Texas Ghost Show. And I'm also going to be signing some books there and stuff. But I'm hoping to restart a new experiment regimen sometime around the end of April. We've got some new ideas and some new equipment that I've been working on over the winter that I want to get out and refine a little bit and do some testing with. And we're looking for some more answers, man.
Everything you design, David, is based for a certain thing you're looking for, I assume, right?
Right. We're looking for to try to figure out a way to look at something that we theorize may be there.
Now, we've talked about audio. We've talked about sound. We've talked about energy waves. We've talked about weather. What about actually seeing something? Not an orb, but something that definitely has a human-like figure to it.
Like an apparition, for example. Well, you know, there's a lot of things that come into play. It may be that our consciousness is being influenced by a specific frequency of EMF that's causing us to have an experience. These things have to be eliminated. It may be that we are seeing a projection on a holographic boundary of a wormhole of someone's consciousness reassembling what they looked like when they were physical. I mean, there are many things that it can be. And the thing is we're still not certain what it is. We haven't defined ghost yet. We haven't really put a definition other than a folkloric one on the whole idea of ghost. So what we have to do is to define what ghost is. What is it scientifically? And in order to do that, we've got to map ghost. We've got to map it out. And that's kind of what we're trying to do. We're trying to look at all of the aspects that may build up to its creation, its manifestation. And then hopefully we'll have that moment, that eureka moment, where we say, what the heck is this, you know? And realize, hey, it's made out of this, or this is what it is. And the only way to do that is to jockey in the right position, to be in the right place in the right time with the right equipment running. And it doesn't take rocket science to do it. Anybody out there that goes out on weekends and does this is capable of making a dramatic discovery if they go about doing it in the right manner.
Have you been to cemeteries?
Yes, I have. I have a lot of mixed feelings about that, because
I know it's almost like you should leave them alone.
I know. It's like, to me, that's kind of a sacred place. Yeah. You know? But think about it. If you were a dead person, would you be hanging out in the cemetery?
No.
I mean, I wouldn't be.
No,
I'd be hanging out down at the bar downtown.
If I had the ability to hang around anywhere, I wouldn't be in a cemetery.
No, I'd be someplace where I could see life or see a part of the physical life that I was missing, you know, so I could enjoy that a little bit, or at least, you know, reflect in it. I think there are things that occur in cemeteries. I think a lot of it has to do with...
I'd go to places, David, that I had to wait in line and just walk right in.
Yeah, exactly. Just for personal gratification.
That's right.
But I think what happens in these cemeteries are part of the observer effect. I think people interact in the environment, and that may trigger some of the activity that's been associated in graveyards. I think it's more of that. Because if no one was there, I doubt that, you know, they're out there lawn bowling between the headstones. I think it may be in response to someone being present that they encounter these type of activities. But, you know, again, can't prove that yet, but it's kind of the way I'm leaning on that. Because we've certainly got way more activity in historical structures than we've ever gotten in a cemetery.
Well, you've really taken a scientific approach to this in your work, Paranormal Technology. I mean, you really got into it.
Well, I felt it was required. There was nothing out there like this that would give people a guide. And the fascinating thing is the people who have read it have, you know, just about everyone that reads my book emails me and we converse and we talk. People read this two or three times, and then they put it in their kit to take out on the
investigation. Yeah, I was going to say, it's like a training manual and a guide, a field guide to ghost hunting. We'll be back in a moment with your questions, your stories, with David Rountree on Coast to Coast AM.